Welcome to Minority Corner
with Aneke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner.
Well, hello, lady love. You wearing clothes?
Yeah, I am, and we'll address that at the beginning of the show.
All right.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'm going to be talking about if you're wearing clothes or not. I also want to just talk about Oprah's speech.
Yes.
Oprah for president. Let's talk about all of that goodness. She is a light of hope
yes.
and a ray of sunshine. But at the end of the episode, we're going to get into my corner, and we're going to talk about where I have a new program. Michelle Obama had Let's Move.
Yes.
I have Let's Eat.
Ooh.
I have a Let's Eat program. And we're going to talk about the racial politics of obesity and food.
Ooh, I love that. And before your corner, I am going to be talking about all of those Time's Up pins that we saw during the Golden Globes and the men wearing them and how some of them may be hypocrites.
Oh, watch out. Aneke is putting the spotlight onto you.
Got my eye on you.
It might be time for you to take that pin off.
Now, should we get into the show?
Girl, I am so ready for this.
Oh, let's do it then. We are here.
Yeah, I guess we are. And just so for those of you, we're just gonna jump right into it.
What are we jumping into?
I have it on hot rumor that Aneke may or may not be naked right now.
I'm not. Okay, so here's
okay,
the thing.
Putting the kibosh onto that.
I am. There is no rumor. So James, one, just sausage is made. I pick up my phone and I'm all discombobulated, so I giggle a little bit. And then James goes, why are you giggling? Because you're naked?
Because you all know, this is episode 111. For those of you who've been here from the get, you know Aneke loves a little giggle when she's naked.
No, that is not the truth. That is,
isn't it, though? Isn't it? Rewind the tape. Go back to the beginning.
This episode is one. Revisionist history going on.
That's how I remember it.
Revisionist History is Malcolm Gladwell's podcast. Listen to it. It's really good.
Speaking of Malcolm Gladwell, I'm reading
Wait,
the tipping.
Wait, let me finish my sentence.
I'm going to finish it.
Okay.
What are you going to say?
I don't want to get off of this naked topic real quick.
I thought you were segueing me into Malcolm Gladwell. Okay, we'll put a pin in that.
It was a really good segue, but I don't want to get off of this note because
I thought we were already put the kibosh on that rumor.
Last week, we got to really emphasize this too, because I'm not naked. I'm wearing a robe and a headscarf because I'm lazy.
I can corroborate this.
It is wintertime Aneke and I am lazy. I don't care. But okay. I thought I would be able to pull it off because last week we did not open up a video chat. We just purely did it on the phone and I looked cute and I was like, you know what, whatever. So today I was like, well, we're not going to pull up a video chat. I'm going to have my titties loose and my hair tied up.
The tits are loose.
And here comes James popping up a video chat and here I am.
I want to see you. It's been a while.
I got no eyebrows.
It's okay, Aneke. They can't see this. Why are you describing it to them? Now they're picturing this.
Because they need to know the full story. Your secret is safe.
Your secret is safe, but you are putting yourself on blast right now, young lady.
The audience gots to know.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll do an expose later. Can we go back to Malcolm Gladwell?
Yes. Now we're back to Malcolm Gladwell.
He is my bedtime reading right now. So when I can't sleep, I like to do a little reading. I'm reading The Tipping Point right now. It is so good.
Yeah, it's
and
excellent.
I wanted to bring it up because he talks about how Blue's Clues became sticky, and he describes stickiness as like a way that like different trends like stick or become part of the mass, like the help to become the tipping point.
Yeah.
And I just thought of us, of how because we are like Blue's Clues, only more black, queer, and ladylike.
Tagline.
Right in there. But you said that Malcolm Gladwell has a podcast.
Yes. Okay. So one, I love Malcolm Gladwell.
Why is he so brilliant?
Well, he is like he's like a pop psychologist. Like I wouldn't. Woo! That felt
I was into it. I know. I love psychology and I love pop culture. And mixing together, that is the kind of psychology I can get into.
Yeah, like, I don't think he's actually a psychologist. I think he's, like, a journalist. Oh. He wrote for, like, some major newspaper. Yeah. But the way that he investigates things, to me, is just, like, super excellent. I read Tipping Point a long time ago. His other, he has David and Goliath, I think, is another one. There is, of course, I'm blanking on all of his books, but they're all basically on trends and sociology and all that good stuff that you and I both like. Right. There is one segment in Tipping Point, I'm not sure if you're there yet, but he talks about the different types of people who spread trends.
That part
really got me. I love
that. Right, because you've got the connectors, you've got the mavens, and then you've got the salespeople. And what I also like is he describes as Paul Revere was essentially a connector and a maven.
Yes.
And that, like, because there was another guy who rode his horse out, and no one talks about him.
No one gives a
because
shit about that guy.
He wasn't well connected, didn't have a network, and didn't really seem to know shit, so people weren't really trusting, you know, what he was saying. And also just like, it's so interesting of just like the idea of tipping points and how things have to reach a tipping point. And I just really love, and it's so interesting because they'll talk about like that, like how New York used to be hella violent and crazy.
Right.
And it had to reach, and like all of a sudden it just, there was a tipping point where the violence just really dramatically decreased. And he describes the different sort of factors that go into that.
Yeah.
And I think that with a lot of the movements and stuff that we're seeing and I feel like we're on another tipping point that's happening right now.
Agreed.
In terms of women, like just equality across the board.
Awareness of equality,
Mindfulness, spirituality. Right. I think that we're there. And so keep going, everybody. Keep doing the work. Yeah.
So this is basically Linda tripping me talking to you right now, and audience,
okay,
you guys
up,
get
girl?
To get to get this. But I really, since you're really into his books, I want you to listen to his podcast, because he talks a lot about, he goes into all of those different aspects for certain different things. Like, basically, it's called Revisionist History, because he's taking a look at things that happened in history and the other side of it. You know how stories always have, like, different sides? So,
and you rarely hear the other side. You hear a certain side that, like, you know, straight white dudes wanted you to hear.
Yeah, or, like, there's so many different things. He talks about French fries, about, like, how they changed beef towel from beef towel into a more vegetable-based oil, and the whole connotation of health and how that changed it and the flavor of French fries. He talks about college and how, you know, why some colleges have terrible food and others have great food, but it all boils down to who gets access to college. Like, your college may have terrible food, but you have a lot more low-income kids that are able to come to school there because of it. Yeah, like, he really goes deep. I love it. He also talks about donors for colleges. That was a big one for me. Like, how some colleges have these huge, huge endowments, but they still get people donating money to them, whereas, like, colleges that are poor and struggling, nobody's donating money to them. So it's...
Wow.
Just listen to it. It's great. I love it.
And I what I love too is, like, you'll read one of his books, and like you said, because he's such a journalist, he is just giving you so much information. I learned about like why Sesame Street took off, and
and
the amazing factors of what Sesame Street has done again, like, and like also like Paul Revere and like how
it's
Hush
great.
Puppy Shoes came into like being, and the Baltimore syphilis epidemic that was happening. Like, there's just all these different things, but they all go underneath sort of like how cultural epidemics happen. And I think they're very, very, I think it's fascinating. And I think us, I think we are mavens in our industry, I would say as well. So I think
I'm
it's
more
an
of
important
a connector.
Thing. Ooh, look at you.
I know.
I was...
I'm a connector because I know people and I connect things. I'm like, you'll like this. Oh, you'll like that. Oh, you need to look at that. Like, definitely a connector.
But you're a maven in sense of, like, you know shit. Like, you've done this podcast, I think, makes you a maven, I would say.
Okay, thank
because you.
Because
you
from are one maven, I'll take it.
From one maven to another. Maven to maven. That's our new TV show. Or our next podcast. Welcome to Maven to Maven.
We know shit.
We know shit. Oh my God. If we could go back in time, that would be the podcast right there.
I know.
Also, speaking of a connector, a maven, and a salesperson.
Yes.
She is all in one. Can we talk about Oprah Winfrey?
Oh, Oprah, I love you.
Just when I thought that she couldn't be any more of my, like, literally... She is my guru. I listen to her podcast every morning.
I mean, we talk about Oprah all the time on this podcast.
And like, she inspires me so much as like an actor, as like a truth teller, as a storyteller, as a person yeah. trying to make an impact in the world. She yes. just, oh God. And that speech at the Golden Globes.
Amazing. I felt like she was talking directly. I mean, I'm not a little girl, but she was,
felt you like are she at was heart.
Talking to me because yeah. even though she was very, very concise with her words, and
she
talked about seeing Sidney Poitier being a Black person to receive the award, mm-hmm. and then she very carefully said women seeing mm-hmm. her, but mm-hmm. I know she meant Black women.
Oh, hells yeah. Absolutely.
I know she meant Black women.
Absolutely.
And I fucking love her for that. I love Oprah. She knows how to fucking give the little cues for people to know mm-hmm. who it's for, but also mm-hmm. make it wide enough so people can feel like it's for everyone Absolutely. Else too.
Also educating the people about the, I forget the name of the woman. It feels terrible. About the woman who she just yes. died recently.
Yes.
And she was raped and brutalized by yes. six white men.
Yes.
And then they cut to Ava DuVernay. I was like, ooh, bet that's Ava's new movie. Like, let's tell these stories, you know, that are yeah. coming out. And she, on that huge platform, taking up space to also educate and just, I mean, Reese Taylor, thank you. Mm-hmm. And that just taking that moment, that like 9 minutes of a moment, and just right. filling it with everything that was empowering, educational. And also, a friend of mine said too that he appreciated as a white guy, but yeah. And he said that, you know, when she also pointed to that there are the phenomenal men
yes.
in the room as well, you know?
Yes, because she names it. She goes, yes, we're dealing with all these gross power for men, but she also talks about the men that are helping as allies as well. So she yeah. knows how to include while also naming it. That's what yeah. makes her so great. Like, Oprah is an empire, and she knows it. And yeah. she's relatable, but also, that's why everybody loves her, is because she can be relatable. You can imagine she's 1 minute on Instagram telling Gail to lotion her ashy elbows, and then the next minute charging us to go change the world and have a yes. sea change in the yes. way we think. Like, yep. Everybody's, and can we also talk about this too?
Yeah, I know
where
you're going
with this. Because we have to talk about this.
Oprah for president?
Yeah, so everybody's yeah. been like on Facebook and blah, 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 Oprah for president, and I've seen back and forth. People are like, mm-hmm. no, I don't want fucking Oprah for president, and then other people are like, I love Oprah, she's my president. And mm-hmm. you know what? I, one, am kind of annoyed with the backlash. I wasn't yeah. expecting myself to be annoyed with the backlash, but I'm annoyed with the backlash.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I personally don't really want Oprah to run for president. I want a political person to run for president, but I think it's good to look at Oprah for qualities that we want in a person to run for president.
Good call.
I also think that we need to look in, Corner Kid Maury posted about this too, where we need to look into the different qualities of why Black women, wasn't Maury? I don't know, Maury. You posted something and I liked it.
Somebody posted okay. this. Kudos to you. Maybe Maury, maybe not.
We need to look at who has access to the political sphere mm-hmm. and why Black women have a hard time gaining access. And the fact that mm-hmm. Oprah's been able to break so many barriers is wonderful. So mm-hmm. I think all the hate towards Oprah not being running for president speaks to something different.
Oh, and absolutely.
And I think we need to examine that, you know?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's like when I hear, it's interesting because before Trump, if I had heard Oprah for president, I'd be like, haha, that's funny. Let's get serious.
Exactly.
But now I'm like, fuck yeah. Suit yeah. me up. Honestly, I'm not even kidding because I'm so here for fucking Oprah Winfrey. Like she right. is such an inspiration to me. And one day when I am winning that Cecil B. DeMille Award, I will right. think back to that moment when Oprah fucking inspired me. Like,
yes.
it does. It impacts. Like, when I see Sterling K. Brown winning an award, it lets me know I can do it. There
exactly.
is room. That glass ceiling is being cracked all over.
Exactly.
But back to the point is that, like, for me, Trump did, to a certain degree, crack a glass ceiling of just like, all right, anyone really can do it. And I get it. He's also a rich white man. But at the same time, the qualifications have been yeah. like, oh, he's even that playing field. And like,
right.
I would think that Oprah would be able to, she is so fucking smart and would surround herself with right. the most intelligent and capable people, like, and would just do such great, amazing fucking work. And so I'm just like, why not? If she did run, I would stop everything that I'm doing and I would go work on her campaign because
oh, wow.
it is like, oh my God, if she were to run, it would be like, this is the moment to like have actual revolutionary change. I think she's the one person that could really change the system from within. And wow. Maybe that's the tipping point. Maybe Oprah is that tipping point.
I don't know. I'm quite there yet. I'm not quite there yet. But
I'm
going
to sell you on it. I'm also a salesman. I'm also a salesman.
I know. I'm not quite there yet. But I do, one, want us all to not let the president talk deflate who Oprah is and what she represents. You know what I mean?
She represents hope, right? Like, right. I'm listening to that speech, and I was crying like a baby through that fucking thing. It was so fucking beautiful. And I was like, she radiates light and hope. And what's also so great about her is she's a lifelong learner. If you listen to her podcast, she's learning right along with you. You know, she does not pretend to like, oh, I know everything. She's bringing these guests on like Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson or whatever.
She's not infallible.
Like,
and she'll be the first to admit that. I mean, she fucking introduced us to Dr. Phil and he's a charlatan. But that makes her so much more important to me is that she admits her mistakes and I don't know. I just feel like I don't want this president talk to overshadow the fact of Oprah being a great example of how magical and wonderful and amazing Black women can be.
Yeah. And absolutely. And just like in general, like how we as human beings, how powerful we are if we give ourselves the permission to allow us to. And especially Oprah's such a great example because she came from nothing. Yes. She was living in a world that said, you are nothing.
Yep.
And she told herself and she said, I am something.
Exactly.
And that's why, like, if she becomes became president, oh my God, right?
Yeah.
You can do it. You can do whatever it is you want. It's literally the antithesis of what Trump represents, you know?
I mean,
it's literally the opposite end of the spectrum.
Like, he's doing such a terrible job. Like, I will be so happy with anybody else. Like, come on.
Done. Well, on that note. Well, Aneke, let's get into this damn show because I feel you've got something to talk about.
I do. I'm going to keep up the conversation going on about what happened at the Golden Globes. We're going to be talking about...
let me put on my fancy tie.
Those Time Up pins, who was wearing them, and who might be a hypocrite.
Ooh, can't wait to find out. Tell me!
All right, guys, we are in my corner.
Dime. That's how we say it in Spanish. Dime. Tell me.
James has been slowly drip-drop introducing Spanish into his language, his normal conversation.
Oh, yeah, I went to España. I'm still working on my bilingual.
I know,
bilingual.
You laugh in Spanish.
I still laugh in Spanish. People are like, it takes them a while. They're like, oh, you laugh in Spanish. Yes, I do. All right.
Okay, so I, as we know, the Golden Globes happened last weekend. You guys are hearing this on Friday. So I want to keep the conversation going because a long time, like, what normally happens is we talk about something and then we move on to the next conversation and then we forget about what we were just talking about. That's the normal cycle of what happens in pop culture.
Absolutely.
And that is usually what happens in Hollywood and how a lot of these men like Harvey Weinstein got to kind of slip under the radar because people would know about it, they talk about it, and then they move on to the next topic and then it'd be forgotten. So I want to bring up, I read this article in Jezebel. It is written by Ellie Sheet. I'm probably pronouncing your last name wrong. I'm so sorry.
Let us know, Ellie.
And so basically, it's called A Brief Audit of the Golden Globes Woke Male Allies. Now, Jezebel gets a little snarky sometimes for my taste.
Oh.
And
you don't
I'm
like
going to
snark?
Keep it real. I like snark, but sometimes snark can get a little too oppressive. Like, I feel like snark with some joy is fun.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There have been several moments in my life where I've gotten so completely snarky and curmudgeon where people have been like, eh, and left me alone.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Oh, okay. You don't have to say.
No, I mean, no, I mean, like, absolutely, you've had that realization. I've seen you be snarky
2006
before.
2006 was a rough year in
that
game.
Oh, my God. Like, in fact, just a few weeks ago, I was like, here comes the snark queen. Queen of the snark. No, I'm sorry.
Okay. I get it. I get what you're saying. Okay, so, and to be fully honest, this author, I like her, but sometimes I have to take a break from her. So when I opened up this article, I was like, oh, here we go. This is going to be more snark. But I think it's good that we bring it up. First of all, there's the issue of allyship, and there's also the issue of being for a cause by just slapping something on your lapel, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people kind of begrudgingly like accepted the women wearing all black to the Golden Globes. But I thought it was beautiful. They're like, oh, rich women wearing black, way to stand up. But I think it's one, it shows solidarity, it shows uniqueness, it shows a togetherness, and that we're in it together, and I love that.
And
right?
Also, can I just jump in here? Like, what else were they fucking supposed to do? Like, I don't... Exactly. Like, it's their job. This is the industry. Like, were they just not supposed to go? Like, what was the other option? Or just wear normal outfits as if nothing was going on? Like, calm exactly. down, people. Calm down.
I know. Like, that's... Yes. That's why I was kind of, like, a little annoyed to open up this article, because I'm like, what... These are actors. Like, what do we want? Like, come on. But... This one was actually good because it's about the Time's Up pin. Now, you might have noticed a lot of men were wearing Time's Up pin on their lapel.
Yes.
And if you're going to wear something as a statement, one, you need to fully support it, mm-hmm. I feel like.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Two, you need to be able to explain what it is, right? Yeah. It's not a fashion statement. You're not doing it just so you can skate by. No. You're supporting it. Mm-hmm. David Harbour, who was in Stranger Things, and he's going to be the next Hellboy, he was asked to explain what Time's Up meant when he was walking the red carpet, and he could not explain it.
No, he's just like, everybody else is wearing it, and my manager told me I needed to wear it.
It's called read a blurb. All you got to do is be like, we're supporting women in Hollywood, and we think that there's a gross misuse of power. Easy.
I feel like you could just hear Time's Up, and I would know exactly what... I have not read a single article about it, and I can already piece it together, that it's like, all right, Time's Up, time to do something about... ending this, you know, bullshit that's going on in Hollywood, equality for women. Stop raping right. and sexually harassing women in the industry.
Yeah.
Isn't that it? That. That's so, what I would say on the red carpet.
Yeah. So he, yeah, basically, he is, it's Time's Up for all the gross power, gross imbalance of power. Mm-hmm. He basically is on the low end. He was an idiot, didn't know it. So I'm like, whatever, you're an idiot, moving on.
Yeah.
These men uh-oh. In this article.
Nikki's got her eyes locked in on you.
And it's kind of annoying to me because some of these guys I really respect. Like, first of all, Gary Oldman. Mm-hmm. He famously Fifth Element. He's the Bram Stoker's Dracula. He's been a famous actor for a very long time. He won a Golden Globe for his best performance by an actor in a motion picture for his portrayal of Winston Churchill in the movie The Darkest Hour, mm-hmm. which I want to actually give more credit to the makeup artist because that guy's story is amazing. You guys research him. Mm. He is awesome. Mm. In fact, quit Hollywood and then was asked to come back to do Gary Oldman's makeup. Gary Oldman said he would only do this role if he got this makeup artist to do it. So...
And you said that's you a weren't a maven. Point proven.
Oh, maven to look maven. At you bringing it once back. Again.
Look at this maven.
Maven. Okay. So Gary Oldman was wearing this Time's Up pin, right?
Yeah.
In 2001,
uh-oh, damn it.
Gary Oldman's ex-wife, mm-hmm. Dania Fiordentino, accused Oldman of hitting her in the face with a telephone receiver in front of their crying children. Ugh. He denied allegations and was eventually awarded sole custody.
Whoa.
And his manager told the Washington Post that the alleged assault never happened and charges were never filed. Gary Oldman is a libertarian and also called Nancy Pelosi a fucking useless cunt mm-hmm. in 2014 Playboy issue. Now, we all may have issues with people in power, but
you don't call
them
the C word.
I know.
That's too much, Gary Oldman. And also, just to go back to like how the whole entire thing happened with the cops, just remember, yeah. When was this? Like 19 or 2000?
2001.
I'm just putting this out there, but remember the LAPD is pretty fucking corrupt and like Hollywood owns yeah. them. So yep. I'm not surprised that this happened, that like it just disappeared. So much shit in Hollywood yes. disappears with the police, and it's been corrupt since you've seen Chinatown. It's always been corrupt. So
I got one more thing on Mr. Oldman.
Oh God!
Remember when Mel Gibson went on that big racist anti-Semitic rant?
What, he defended him and was like, "That's my friend. He's okay."
He goes, "Jesus." He got drunk and said a few things, but we've all said those things.
No, I've never. I have never.
Take your fucking pin off, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Don't be a hypocrite.
And give me that award back. See, I'm glad you were telling me this. Can you always keep me up to date of who is fuckery in the industry so I know? So I know when I'm walking that red carpet. I see you, Gary Oldman. seen
you. I know. And I was actually very charmed by an interview that he did recently, and it just bums me out that, but you know, we need to be reminded of these things. But also, I do get that people change, people right. make a difference. True. But he has never said anything about changing or making a right. difference. And 2014 was not that long ago.
Yeah,
so.
No. Yeah, this is, he's not changed.
No. Okay, next up.
Okay.
We got our good friend James Franco Uh-oh. Wearing a Time's Up Uh-oh. Pin.
My buddy, don't do this to me.
Oh, you know James Franco is a mess. So,
we both are Meisner-trained actors.
First of all, he did his impression of Tommy Wiseau for the Disaster Artist movie, right?
Yeah.
And he won the award, I think, for best actor in a comedic musical film.
He did. Sidebar, I have no idea who the fuck this Tommy guy is, but continue.
Oh, well, okay, there's a movie, real quick, there's mm-hmm. a movie called The Room. It's been billed the worst, best movie ever, because it's literally, like, the worst movie. I watched it a long time ago when it was, like, hip. I have to give a shout-out to Corner Kid Renee, who hit me to this movie. We would watch it as a joke. That's basically how people watch the movie, because it's, like, the most... like, literally, they enter the scene and they go, oh, hi, James, and then start talking. Like, it's it's a terrible movie. Mm-hmm. So people are like, how did this movie get made? James Franco... made a movie about how the movie got made okay. and how Tommy Wiseau is a weirdo okay. and all of that. Okay. So basically he brings up Tommy Wiseau and like pushes him away from the mic, which yeah, is kind of rude.
I heard about that.
But that has nothing to do with this. Oh. What we're talking about is him being a hypocrite with his Time's Up pin.
Uh-oh.
In 2014...
Not too long ago.
Not too long ago, Franco was revealed to have hit on a 17-year-old girl on Instagram.
Yikes.
An episode that also did not prevent Saturday Night Live from booking him to host their Weinstein-themed show. That, little dig. He writes, I'm embarrassed, Franco said at the time. I guess I'm just a model about how social media is tricky. It's a way for people to meet each other today. But what I learned is you don't know who's on the other end. I use bad judgment, and I learned a lesson. You know what? I don't mind that apology.
Yeah.
I feel like that's fine.
Sounds like he kind of came to terms with it, yeah?
He came to terms with it. But here's the thing that raises more questions that people are kind of like, what's going on? So, Ally Sheedy, she is an actress, right?
Yeah.
She tweeted, then deleted. So she tweeted, her first tweet goes, James Franco just won. Please never ask me why I left the film/TV business. Next tweet. Okay, wait, bye. Kristen Slater and James Franco at a table on the Golden Globes. Hashtag me too. Next tweet. Ally Sheedy. Why is a man hosting? Why is James Franco allowed in? Said too much. Love all. Hashtags Golden Globes. So some shit's going down. And then also, something just came out. I didn't get to read it before we actually recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an article coming out where there have been three women that are accusing James Franco of inappropriate behavior. So... while I'm not fully, this is like where things get a little gray for me, because like on Jezebel, like, yes, Gary Oldman, fuck you, you're a hypocrite.
Yeah.
James Franco, I'm kind of like, I need to kind of wait and see where things come out. He's kind of a gray area.
I'm so
for
torn because he's done so much great work for the LGBT community as well. You know?
I mean, you could do great work in one community and total shit for another. So that's kind of the problem with a lot of the stuff going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's tricky. That's mm-hmm. hard. Yeah.
So he's tricky. Just keep an eye on him being tricky.
Yeah.
Being tricky.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up, one that's way more black and white. Christian Slater. He is in Mr. Robot right now. He was wearing a Time's Up pin. He's been an actor forever. Everybody knows Christian Slater.
Oh, yeah. He's always... Heathers. I feel like he always oftentimes plays like a kind of slightly creepy weirdo dude that's kind of sexy, but you're like kind of creeped out by him. Like a Skeet Ulrich.
I would say Skeet Ulrich is a little bit more on the sexy side, but that's just my own preference.
Of course it is. Yeah, that is just you. I don't know. Have you seen Scream? Creepy.
Yeah, but that's just him being an actor.
Oh, okay, look anyway, at you. So, swoon.
I can't get over, you know, when you have a crush when you're 14, you have a crush forever.
That's
so,
true, yeah.
Okay, so Christian Slater. Slater was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in a Television Series, was charged with one count of battery in 1997 for assaulting his girlfriend. In 2005, he was charged with third-degree sexual abuse. Although the allegation was later dropped, when asked about his checkered past last year, Slater told the Daily Mail that I regret nothing.
Oh, damn
when
it.
The Daily Beast asked Slater if he'd like a chance to clarify his comments, he erupted with, "What a salacious cunt this guy is."
Oh no. God, okay. Every time I was like, just wait, I was like, okay, 1997, that happened in the past, 2003, okay, right. Oh, an interview, he can apologize or like come to terms with it. Nope. That's all you have to do is just be like, oh, I fucked up.
Yes. Like literally what James Franco said in the last post was exactly what Christian Slater should have
said. Needs to say, yeah. Absolutely.
So Christian Slater, take your fucking pin off.
Yeah, take it off. You don't get to wear
it. If last year you're saying, I regret nothing, you do not get to wear it. Yeah,
I regret nothing. Time's up for you to be wearing that pen.
Yes, thank you. Okay, and then last but definitely not least is our good old friend Justin Timberlake.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Anthony Anderson.
Oh, well, was he wearing a pen?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see the close-up. Someone's
I didn't see.
Because they would cut to him and I'd be like, oh, I wonder what he's thinking right now. Because isn't he
because
like, didn't he beat
he
his
had
wife?
Some rape allegations.
Some rape allegations, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which my cousin, she has a very difficult time. As amazing as Black-ish is, she just can't get there because he is a roadblock for her to get to watch that show.
Damn.
I know.
Yeah, that's rough. Even though Tracee Ellis Ross is the most amazing person
in
the world.
And the rest of the kids on that show and the mom amazing. And Lawrence Fish, they're all so fucking fantastic and amazing. And like
Anthony Anderson.
I know. But then it goes, let's go to your last one.
Okay, so the last one, Justin Timberlake wearing a Time's Up pin.
You know I already got side eyes for him.
We got side eyes for him.
Do I have any more eyes left?
Well, you're about to lose some more because...
God. It's about Take Back the
Night. There's Take Back the Night,
they were like, the Take Back the Night group was like, cease and desist, please, Mr. Timberlake, don't release the song or like, he's like... And just ignored it and then was like, I didn't know what it was about.
Exactly. And not to mention what he did to Janet Jackson.
Yeah, which we have episodes upon episodes that we have already discussed. And I'm also on the Repeaters podcast show talking about it as well. So you can, conversation, it's out there. Go find it.
Exactly. So the latest thing that I really want to bring up about Justin Timberlake is that he was in Woody Allen's latest film. Why are people still in Woody Allen films?
Yeah, why? I feel like Woody Allen should be left with like popsicle sticks to make his movies, like popsicle stick figures. Like everyone
should
be like,
he shouldn't be allowed to be near a camera.
Well, I'm saying like Woody Allen's like, oh, I'm gonna make a movie, and all the actors should just be like, fuck you, and even like up and coming actors like, nope, and even porn stars being like, I got morals, and he's just left with like
nothing,
popsicle sticks. To make movies.
Exactly. Somebody recently opened up Woody Allen's, there was in a library, they have all of his past notes or whatever. There's a fancy name for it. I should know. I'm a librarian. But basically it's his box of notes. And
Woody Allen's box of notes.
That's what it is. But there's a fancy name for it. And I don't
know
what it
Woody
is.
Woody Allen's box of notes. I have one.
Somebody actually spent the time to go through it. Ooh. And they found out that he has endless notes on teenager and adult men relationships. He's obsessed with teenage girls, and a lot of the times he would write personal monologues for actresses that were in his films that were like disgusting and dirty. He's a pervert. He's a nasty man, and people need to stop being in his films. I'm looking at you, Kate Winslet. Like, I hate to do this because I love actors and I know that actors need to get a break and blah, 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 and they like get a job, blah, blah, blah. But Justin Timberlake, you have an album coming out where you're going to be a man in the woods. You don't need to be in this film.
No,
do better, Justin Timberlake. We all loved you. The Black community loved you. Women loved you. Do better. Help, respect your audience. And actually, you have a moment, I feel like, if he is going to bring Janet Jackson on stage for the Super Bowl, I will then.
It's my only way that I could possibly.
All right.
It's my only way that I could.
Timberlake.
It's my only way that I could correct my gaze with him is if that happens. If it doesn't, my eyes are already gone.
Then I'm done. I've
already. And this is a man who, who did a flash mob tribute to Justin Timberlake, the Barry flash mob. So I am really hurt about this. I am butt fucking hurt about this.
we love Justin Timberlake and he just keeps shitting on us. So I really, this is my plea to, I know you listen, JT.
Yeah, you always be listening to the Minority Corner. You've been trying to get on the show. We just haven't had time to book you.
Yeah, we don't have time.
Busy schedule.
So do better.
Do better.
And take the pin off. Or if you're going to wear the pin, actually fucking stand by it. So this is just my plea to all the men out there and women and everybody who supports causes. This is just a few of the men
that are, I'm sure there are even more men who should probably be taking that pin off, but you are absolutely right. I do have a side question. I don't want to take just too much time, but just to weigh in on this. Where is like the, I guess like, is there for some of these men, and I guess I think there's a huge conversation about power, which that's what Oprah was talking about. And I think that's obviously like the cornerstone of this. And I guess like it's hard because I think James Franco is like the first one where I'm like, oh, no, not him. Like all the rest of them. Just like, ah, oh, fuck them. Like, whatever. But like, is there a point in time where I wonder, I would like to hear a story. Here's what I would like. I would like to hear one of these men in Hollywood who said, yes, that used to be me years ago. And here is now I have reformed. I am so not about that, and here I am.
That's
now.
That's not hard to do.
And I haven't heard any of that come forward, you know. And it would be nice to see one of those examples, because instead I'm having to like come up with like, oh, maybe James Franco's reformed, and when can we? And you know, like I would just like, I wish that there were guys like that already out there.
Well, I will say that I don't know. I forget what it was for, but I think Jonah Hill did something fucked up. Mm. He did something fucked up, but then he went on a late night show and gave a sincere apology. Mm. That's all we need to do. And that's the problem with like Hollywood and Washington, D.C. It's filled with a bunch of people that have egos the size of planets. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to humble yourself when you have an ego the size of a planet and say like, look, I fucked up.
Yeah.
It's not like, and that's as simple as it is for me, at least, is to go and say like, look, I fucked up. This was wrong. This was a terrible thing that I did. Yeah. I used my power for grossness. And now to prove to you that I'm reformed, I'm going to donate to these causes. Yep. I'm going to volunteer for these things. I'm going to hire women to do these things. I'm going to stay away from that, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And then live like a normal, decent person.
Absolutely.
There are so many men out there that we're not talking about because they are just decent, normal people.
Yeah.
Like, I hope I don't jinx this, but fucking Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
People love Tom Hanks because he's just a chill dude.
Yeah, Denzel Washington, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
And you know, and like everybody misses the mark every once in a while. And that's actually kind of the root word of actually what to sin is like, it's a math terminology of it means to miss the mark. Right. And so we all do it, and it's just about correcting it. Right. It happens.
Right.
And I think like, and then it doesn't need to feel like so much of it won't have to feel like a witch hunt. And I hate that term, you know, but it would feel less of that if people just kind of own up to their shit and say, all right, I hear you. I'm going to fucking work on this. And like you said, then donate and create other opportunities. Like, it's not like no one's looking for blood. We're just looking to be better. We're looking to be a better society.
We want to change the way things have functioned so we can function better. Yeah. It's like if you got a machine and it keeps glitching, you're going to fix the glitch.
Yep. Fix the glitch. Let's get those pins. And then next year, we'll be like, who needs to take off their
Who needs to take off this fix the glitch?
Awesome.
So there we go. Watch yourself, y'all. And this is just apologize.
All right, America.
Yes.
We need to talk.
Okay, what are we talking about? I'm America.
You are America.
I'm America's proxy right now.
You are. All right. You'll be the response. So, as some of you might know, today is actually, today is the last day. I've been on the whole 30 for 30 days. Today is my last day.
I applaud you.
It has absolutely changed my life, and it's really got me thinking about food. I started doing some research and looking into food and race and how political it actually all is. So we need to talk, America, because I think we don't really realize the numbers and statistics, and I'm worried about your life and your health.
James.
So, what up?
Are you thinking about food? because you're hungry?
No. I'm just well satisfied.
I just had to. It was a cheap joke. It was a soft pitch.
Not at all.
It was a soft pitch. I had to do it.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of this comes from the stateofobesity.org, American Heart Association, and a few articles from the New York Times and the Huffington Post.
Nice. So you did your research.
Did some digging. I went into a rabbit hole.
I love it. Good sources.
Just some fun facts because so what's happening here in America? Mm-hmm. So heart disease, just as a reminder, is the number one killer for all Americans.
Yes.
For all Americans, heart disease. And through proper diet and nutrition, these things are preventable. Mm-hmm. And for African Americans, the risk is even higher. Mm-hmm. So Black folks, we have an even higher rate for this. And we Black folks specifically also have a high prevalence for high blood pressure as well.
Yep.
And it's even known as sort of the silent killer. We're very sensitive to things like sodium and salts.
Right.
And they say that we might actually even carry a gene that makes us sensitive to that. So, sidebar, Black folks, check your blood pressure on the reg. Now, then when I went to, what were you going to say?
Well, it just like, and I'm sure you're going to go into this, but it just is like ironic that one, Black people have this gene, and then two, fucking food deserts.
Yes, we will talk about that.
Put a pin in that.
In the food deserts because we are talking about that, right? Mm-hmm. And so then I read some heartbreaking statistics when we talked about obesity and overweight. And the thing about it is it's that like, cigarettes are not the number one killer. Mm. Heart disease is, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, holy fuck. And the whole entire thing that I realized for me doing the whole 30 is a lot of it is about realizing our unhealthy relationship with food. Mm. And a lot of it is through how we've grown up.
Yeah.
And we tell everybody not to smoke, and there's huge campaigns about that. We really need to start looking into our food and what we're putting into our body.
Healthy food.
Because this is your vehicle to do all the great and amazing things that you're meant to do. Right. And I think that it's purposely done that Black and Latino folks have some of the, or do not have the greatest access to food, which we'll talk about in a moment, too.
Right.
So African Americans, 70, Aneke, hold on to something.
What? Oh.
This breaks my 75% of African Americans are either obese or overweight.
75%?
75%. Now that's compared to 77% of Latinos compared with 67.2% of whites. So that's
everybody's over average.
So yeah, that already is like everybody not doing too well.
Well, what about Asian Latinos, people?
They're not really on these lists. I think they're doing really well. I don't know. But they weren't on the no one was really tracking them.
Right.
They're doing really good.
You do you. So, we'll just.
I mean, I was looking at this one website and it was kind of tracking them. I was seeing it was doing it by state.
Oh.
And I was seeing numbers in like around 40%. It was definitely under 50. So.
Okay. So the rest of us, though, are over average.
Then we break down to about 69% of men, African-American men, and 77% of women, Black women, are overweight or obese. Mm. I'm sorry. It used to be 77%. It's 82% now.
Ah, what?
For Black women.
82?
82% of Black women are obese or overweight.
That feels weird.
And so,
to me.
For the Black folks in the community, about they're 1.5 times more likely to be obese compared to white adults. Mm. And 47. And then when we look at this, let me see. What is this? And then we look at just obese factors. So, cutting out the other categories for overweight and obese. Mm-hmm. But if we look at just obesity, it's about 47.8% of African Americans are obese. Compared with 32.6% of white folks. Mm. So there's those numbers as well. I don't have the number for Latinos, but I do know that it is coming in slightly higher than African Americans, which we'll talk about in a moment as well.
I have a quick question.
What up, girl?
Do you, this is just off the cuff because I'm curious and I don't know if you have the number, but what's the difference between overweight and obese?
I don't have the numbers on that.
Tweet us
if you
know.
I don't have the numbers on that.
Let us know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like overweight is like you're having more weight than what your body mass is supposed to have. Mm-hmm. And then like obese, I just would imagine it's like exceedingly that amount.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the exact terminology, but I feel like it's somewhere in that ballpark, but I'm sure there's something more sciencey for that.
Totally.
And then we kick into diabetes. African Americans are just more likely to have diabetes than non-white Hispanics.
I mean, it makes sense. If you're weighing more, then you're more likely to get it.
Got the beaties. Then let's talk about our kids, because I think I want to spend a lot of the time, like, it really focuses down into our kids, because mm-hmm. I think we learn our eating habits, we start young,
it's true.
They grow into it as adults. And also, we are also looking at the adults around us and seeing what they're eating and how, right. when they were parents, what their sort of habits were as well. Mm-hmm. From 1999 to 2012, about 35.1% of African-American children ages 2 to 19 were overweight. Mm.
2 to 19.
From age 2 to 19, yeah.
Dang.
And that's and then that same category, it was 38.9% of Latinos, so it's a few percentages higher. And that's compared with 28.5% of white children. So significantly mm-hmm. a bit of difference there. And then it goes in for obesity, that was just overweight. But then for obesity, that breaks down to 20.2% of black children were obese, 22.4% of Latino children, and then 14.3% of white children.
Mm.
So why? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it, it's not going to surprise you if you really look at it. It's access to proper health care,
right.
especially for immigrant families.
Yes.
Education and access to health care. Food traditions also, which are passed down, which don't necessarily have like the best, health, especially. And by the same time, it's like food is political because in the black community, especially in the South, we were kind of given the scraps to try to make magical food with.
Exactly.
And it was not the healthiest part.
Yeah. It's but like these are fucking ham hocks and pig feet and the leftover shit, which we turned into delicious food.
Delicious magic. Thank you, Patti LaBelle.
I know.
You know? And we put loads and loads of butter. And also food has a spiritual experience too, because mm-hmm. the coming together of the family to break bread, there's just something so powerful and spiritual about that and wanting it to taste good and wanting to feel good.
Right.
But what this also comes down to is we then start forming an emotional attachment to food, and that's not its place.
Right.
You know, there's like the reason why scientifically, strawberries and apples and bananas taste good is because nature wants us to eat them.
Right.
It's literally nature's natural candy.
It's like, come
right?
on, guys. But, this is good.
But then nature's like, yeah, eat these. But then what we did is we were like, we love this taste, but what can we just
Let's
manufacture
make it better.
With that? And then we've manufactured all these other extra things. And so it's replicating that amazing taste that we crave and want, but in a lot of unhealthy ash shit that we don't actually
Hella
need for
sugar.
Our bodies. It has no nutritional value. Exactly. So we've replicated
Stupid.
It and created this sort of addictive monster.
Right.
So yeah. So then also inequalities also range, like I was saying, from also income.
Right.
Healthier food is also really expensive.
Ooh.
Just yeah.
to interject really quickly, I listened to this one podcast called The Hidden Brain, and they talk about how the wealth distribution or how to show wealth is different now than it was in the 80s. In the 80s, it would be like, oh, this is my Rolex watch. This is my fancy car.
Now it's like, I eat organic.
Yes, I go to Whole Foods. I eat organic. I go to yoga. My kids go to good schools. Even though it's classified as things that you want to do, it's good. But
right.
it's just a way of showing your wealth now.
It's like, look how healthy I am, which does make sense. And also back in the day, mm-hmm. it used to be like, look how big I am.
Yeah.
That means because I can't eat so much food,
well,
right?
Like, back in like the like 1700s.
Way back in like, the 1700s sort of a thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was that. But also, so like I was saying, so any like also education about health.
Yep.
Also like marketing. I have a fact later, but just the exuberant, I think like in Latino programming geared towards children, mm-hmm. about 85% of the ads were for unhealthy snacks.
85%?
85% for the programming geared towards children. And so also just looking from financial, what we're talking about, black and Latino families have earned about $1 for every $2 earned by white families over the past 30 years. Like you were saying, organic, which is also insane.
Yeah.
It's so insane that like healthier food costs more to eat. What? You mean this
exactly.
thing that's going to preserve and make my life better that I need? And so again, like I food is political and we need to keep a watchful eye on it.
Yes.
Because especially if class disparities are getting wider and wider, poor communities and Black and Latino folks are going to get left behind. We're going to be dying off sooner. We're going to have all these health problems.
Exactly.
And with health insurance, we're not going to be able to afford it and yep. all this sort of stuff, right? More than 38% of African American children under the age of 18 and 42% of Latino children under the age of 5 live below the poverty line.
Wow. Okay? That's and a then lot more of people. Like, I really want that to... I think that that statistic is something that people need to understand. That's a lot of people, a lot of children living
children.
In poverty.
Right.
And this isn't like, oh, I can't afford, you know, like to buy the newest Nike. No, this is I can't
food.
Eat every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so more than 12% of Black families and 23% of Latino families live in deep poverty. So that's, yeah. And then we're also breaking this down. So 1 in 4 African-American and Latino families are food insecure, which means that they don't have consistent access to adequate food due to lack of money or other resources. But that's 11% at white households. Mm. So also, you had mentioned this earlier, access to good grocery stores and food deserts, especially in cities.
Yeah.
I mean, I live here in New York and it's, you know, I have to go to Fairway, which is kind of like the fancy kind of bougie grocery store. Because if I go to the C-Town or the other ones, like the produce, like they didn't even have sweet potatoes there. Like they just, and right. the produce, you buy it and it goes bad so fast.
It's
and so
true.
But there's all these sales on all these like box sugary cereals and all these like yep. cookies and da da da. So you don't really have all this access to it.
It's the truth. I live in Oakland right now. I have to go up and I live right on the middle point. If I go down the hill to East Oakland, there's not a grocery store for miles. If I go yeah. up the hill, there's several Safeways. Yeah. So yeah. it's all about access. It's and that's access. What a food desert is. If you live in a food desert, all you have access to is liquor stores, and all they have is like hot Cheetos, soda, and cookies, which is not yep. something that will build a healthy foundation to survive.
Won't be able to sustain. Yeah. And so only 8% of African American residents live in areas with more supermarkets, with one or more supermarkets, like you were just saying, compared with about 31% of white residents. So there's just access to the food that's happening as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one study in Houston from 2000 to 2004 found that 2 out of every 3 foods Latino children consumed included pizza, chips, desserts, burgers, sodas, or juice. So, but these options were cheaper for them. So there's that link between food and income. Oh, and then, so then the other thing too is that African Americans and Latino folk children are have less access to safe places to be physically active. So not only are they not able to go out there and eat food, but also to go out there and
play.
You know, our bodies need exercises.
Running in a park.
Yeah. So white flight, which I think happened, I think it's back in the 70s. A lot
so
of the
so many
pools,
different times.
So every time white flight happens, all the pools in the cities get shut down.
Yep.
Parks start getting shut down.
Mm-hmm.
African Americans were 70% less likely to engage in physical activity than whites, while Latinos were about 30% less likely. So although Latino children might have more obesity or overweight, they're at least more likely to get out there and run around and exercise or something. So,
ooh, I have a good point for that
yeah.
real quick. I grew up in this town called Alameda, which is just outside of Oakland. And I was born in Oakland, but we moved to Alameda because that's where the good schools were at. And mm-hmm. let's be honest, where the white people were at. So mm-hmm. you go to Alameda and the place has a full-on park system. There's parks yeah. everywhere. Each park has its own children's sports teams for free. They have like all of these different things that you can do. There's grocery stores all over. I remember in the place that I grew up, there was a Lucky's and a Safeway's facing each other from across the street. I'm not even kidding. Like, and that yeah. was something that we would joke about. Like, are you a Lucky's or a Safeway's family? Like, that's insane.
So much access to food.
So much access to food. So much access to parks and running around. You go to Oakland, you can't find a Safeway or a grocery store anywhere. And mm-hmm. the parks are filled with unsavory characters that you wouldn't sure. want your children to be around. So yeah. it well, total about face.
Yeah. Well, that was another thing, too. And this kind of goes to something that kind of Malcolm Gladwell was talking about. There was in one of his books he talks about, which I don't necessarily completely. I feel uncomfortable about the broken windows theory. But like when yeah. you have like a neighborhood that is, you know, there's trash all over the place mm-hmm. and There's graffiti all over the place that sometimes, especially like for young mothers, black mothers, they don't feel comfortable with their young daughters running around outside mm-hmm. and playing, you know, because of the environment right. as well.
If there's broken glass, you don't want your kids there. And Malcolm Gladwell is, I'm glad you brought that up, is that everybody's infallible. And there's a lot of his things that he said that I don't agree with, too. So,
sure. Yeah. Doesn't he also talk about how like women can't have the hero's journey?
I don't know. He might have gone back on that. He has gone back on several of his things that he said, though, too. But
see, where he can wear that pin. I know. He can wear it. So about 11.3% of black youth and 99.3% of Latino youth did not eat vegetables during that prior week. Mm. And so also just going back to, again, not having access to things like parks. Mm-hmm. And so about children in neighborhoods that lack access to parks and playgrounds or recreation centers have a 20% to 45% greater risk of becoming overweight. Ugh. So just by not having a park puts you in right in line to have these different health issues.
Right.
And you're just a kid.
Exactly.
You're already on that pathway, right?
I know.
Only 1/3 of Latinos live within walking distance of a park. Man. Compared with almost half of all whites, like you were talking about in Oakland, Alameda. Also, they were less likely to participate. Latino students are less likely to participate in after-school programs, mostly because of costs. So again,
See, access. In the white neighborhood, it's free. People who can afford to pay for that shit, you go and it's free, and then you come over to another neighborhood and you have to pay a lot of money and you don't get access to it. It's political. Yeah. You are bringing up some good-ass points, James.
More than 80% of Latino neighborhoods did not have an available recreational facility compared to 38% of white neighborhoods. For Latino folks, also, there's language barriers sometimes. There's not nutritionists that are trained to reach out to these communities. And also understanding there's the cultural barriers because, right. again, some of their, like the way that they view nutrition and food, it might not be the same way. So there's a whole entire sort of educational program that does need to incur for the whole family as well. Mm-hmm. And again, like also access to healthcare and access to programs. There's this one program called SNAP that I think 35% of, I forget what the acronym stands for, but it gives families, like Latino families, access to some sort of programming or funding to for food. Mm. And there's like 35% who are eligible, but only 24% applied for it, right?
So they don't know.
Don't know about it. But there's also this thing, too, sometimes with, like, and we can go back to Dolores Huerta when she talks about why Latinos don't necessarily vote because they work outside of the system because they're like, fuck you, this system sucks. It's not right. for me. It's oppressed me. Yeah. I don't want anything to do with it, really, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that. So then we just go to the schools and we kind of just dip down what's going on into our school system. And so it starts early. You know, my stepmom is talking about, you know, thank all the snaps to Michelle Obama. Because she got with her
Get Moving
campaign or whatnot. My stepmom, who's a social worker, she said when they went into the foods, they were realizing that they were pumping these foods full of all these addictive substances.
Yes.
So it's like I think I don't know this for sure, but I would say like our generation, like you and I, probably had it some of the worst. They were just pumping food like full of shit.
I remember those gray ass hamburgers.
Yeah, and these addictive ass substances, GMOs, high fructose corn syrup. But Michelle Obama, it's gotten better in the last 5 years. Because of Michelle Obama, what she was doing. If we go back to 1966, the school breakfast program. No, I'm sorry, 1946, we had the National School Lunch Program, which was founded to ensure that kids wouldn't go hungry.
Yeah.
And then in 1966, there was a school breakfast program that started. It was a pilot program. And then in 1975, it was authorized and official, probably in large part due to the Black Panthers, the snaps of them, the work that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these programs are starting to be rolled back. With Michelle Obama, they went in there and they started cleaning up all like the food programs and whatnot. And so it's gotten better the past few years. But the School Nutrition Association, who first originally were like, yeah, we're backing Michelle Obama's programs and initiatives. Let's get these things passed. Well, like we have to remember that this food industry, the school food industry, is $1 billion business and industry.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Yep.
And they make the most profit from
cheap
foods and those relationships with factories and companies that they've already built up.
Exactly.
And so the SNA, the School Nutrition Association, who represents over 57,000 members in the school food service industry have been like helping to get schools to be able to get waivers to sign out of the programs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So like, oh, well, you don't have to have the whole grains or like the fresh fruit that, you know, they were then mandated to have. I remember being in high school and just like buying pizzas. Like, we just like pizzas.
Yeah.
Like, you just, I'm buying a pizza. That was it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's, what? I totally, and it was a greasy ass fucking pizza.
It was so fucking greasy. And so the other, what were you going to say?
No, I was just laughing.
Well, the other thing too is that, like, you know, if you go over, I think the U.S. or the government spends about $3 per student for food. And in France, it's about $7 per student. That, and so that's why they're able to have, like, filet mignon for some of their school lunches and whatnot.
Lucky ass.
And, like, back in the day when they were serving up pizza, it was not as bad because it was homemade in that kitchen. But now schools are so ill-equipped. They literally just have these up. They don't have like real, they can't really do real cooking.
Oh, that's what mine was. Mine was like microwaved almost.
That's what it is. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So back in like the 50s and 60s.
Oh, in like the 40s because they were making it.
They were making it fresh there. So they'd be able to have, it was more whole, it was like more community based.
Exactly.
But now, like you said, it's microwave. And you know, those microwave foods, processed foods, are high in sodium and all kinds of bad shit that is not good for you. Frozen foods are not good for you. We already know this.
I know.
That's what school lunches are.
Yep.
And so, and they also don't have the proper funding to be able to hire actual chefs to come in there. It's usually like, you know, just some guy or some woman who's just doing her best
trying
to program
to make
that microwave,
ends meet.
You know?
And the thing that we also need to talk about is this is public school. When I worked at the private school, their lunches, I was like, holy, what is this? Excuse me. So there we go. Even more wealth distribution problems. If you're able to spend for your kid to go to this expensive ass private school, they're going to get a good, nice, well, nutritious meal that's made in house. But all the regular folks just trying to make a life going to public school get microwaved gray burgers.
Yep, absolutely. So looking at these facts and speaking to you all listeners, I want you to live a long and beautiful, happy life.
Yes.
And we have a problem with food.
We do.
We have an addiction to foods. So my challenge to you all, finding a program that, like, here's the thing. I'm going to do a huge PSA and a huge commercial for the Whole 30 right now.
Okay.
So I did the Whole 30, and if you don't know what the Whole 30 is, it's you can only eat meat, vegetables, and fruit for 30 days. So no processed foods, no sugar, no added anything. It really just gets you to the basics of what it is that you need. And then if you're, you know, vegan or vegetarian, I'm sure there are also choices and options for you as well to be able to follow something like this. The woman who designed it, she was an addict. She was a drug addict. And after she got off of drugs, she realized that, like, her then she was just substituting drugs with then food. And so that's why the Whole 30 is set on, it's sort of like being in rehab from food for about 30 days. And I think specifically those of us of oppressed communities, I'm not surprised, like, not only do we not sometimes have access to healthier food, but also the systems of oppression that we just live in, right?
Okay,
and so life gets tough.
Right.
And I think that those of us in oppressed communities, especially, like, we find ways to numb ourselves. And I think that food, and we find it in different ways, whether it be food, sex, drugs, TV, whatever. Like, I know that I've had, like, TV has fucking raised me. I'm so fucking addicted to that thing. And I've had to, like, work to, like, and realize when is it something that I'm just really enjoying, but or when is it I'm trying to, like, numb myself, right?
Right, I get you.
And so this is my, like, plea, because it's a new year and I love each and every one of you, and I want you to have the best, longest, most vibrant, healthiest life that you can have so you can fulfill your mission in life. Because here's the thing. They, with a capital T, don't want you to live a happy, healthy life. It is purposeful that we eat shitty foods, that we are getting addicted to shitty foods at a very young age. Because if I'm not eating well, I don't have the mental capacity. These children can't do well in school because they're not getting. And so that puts them even further behind. Like, how food is so much of a base level for us to be able to be successful in our lives, which makes sense. It's the fuel that we're putting in our tank. And so I can't be my best self if I'm not getting the best food in my body. And I think that sometimes we've maybe confused, like there's numbing and then there's self-care. And I came to realize this. I told you guys about when I threw up from my peanut allergy.
Totally.
And I was day six and was so close to like saying, fuck this. I'm going to eat whatever the fuck I want, because I had an unhealthy relationship with food that like I was using food to make myself feel better.
Totally.
Like donuts and like cookies and chips or just like pizza or whatever I wanted. But what my self-care actually really needed was some vegetable ass, you know, soup, you know?
Vegetable ass soup.
And what I like about why I'm an advocate for the Whole 30 is that it's only 30 days. Like a lot of these things, like it's like, okay, just for me just to go vegetarian tomorrow, that's like a huge commitment. Or like go paleo or keto or keto kaelin or whatever the fuck that diet is.
Okay.
to do that for like the rest of my life, that's a huge commitment. But what is nice about this is it allows you to hit the reset button, and it's challenging. It is hard, but it's going to put you back into the driver's seat of what it is that you are consuming and putting into your body, because it is purposely done. So it's not an accident that Black and Latino folks have the highest rates of obesity and overweight. They don't want us to get better, because if we are eating well, we're going to be more mindful about what it is that we are taking in and accomplishing into our life, and able to live our go run for city council and go like to be able to do all those great and wonderful things that you want to go and do.
Yeah.
You got to have the proper nutrition to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
So I would highly advocate for this. I want y'all to go out there, live a strong, healthy, beautiful life. You can go to thewhole30.com if you're interested. And also, if you need help, I am here. I will put this out there to the listeners. I am here to help you, support you on this journey. I have a lot of recipes that I've put up on my Instagram. I'm at James Arthur M. And the Instagram community is hella supportive. You tag like hashtag Whole30. Oh my God. Super supportive. There's so many great recipes out there. I can't recommend this enough. Just to put yourself back in the driver's seat, it's the new year, new you. I want you to live your best, healthy life.
It's the end of the show. We did it.
Well, there it is. I love your "we did it."
I'm like, I love it. You know, I just gotta give us an. It's not a surprise. It's like a victory lap. It's like a look at us.
Welcome
it's
to
like,
the
Minority
Corner victory lap. We did. And just little things. We had Shannon Algio last week on the podcast. And Shannon, I'm going to put this in the show notes, but if you're interested in joining Shannon's Illuminate Mastermind Coaching Group, highly recommend.
Shannon is
wonderful and awesome. And help whatever you need to get. We all have a mission in life, and sometimes we just need a little bit of coaching to help us get there and to help our light shine bright.
Beautiful.
And we also have an iTunes shout out.
Ooh, okay, I'm ready. iTunes shout out.
This one is from and it looked like they tried to give us more extra stars than just the 5 that are allotted. So iTunes might want to correct that. People want to
give
more stars.
If someone wants to give us a 6, I will take it.
No, there's 10, Aneke. There are 10 stars.
Oh, shit.
Which isn't even possible. They said, I'd give it more than 5 stars if I could. I always learn and have a ton of laughs every episode. And I love how they're so much more authentic and real with you than a lot of other podcasters.
Yeah, we keep it dirty.
We do keep it dirty and real. So definitely, if you would like to leave us a review, we love receiving the love. We love
thank
you,
you
know,
so much. Yes, please.
You can go on iTunes and you can do it right. Or I think they don't call it iTunes anymore, do they? They call it Apple Music or Podcasts. I don't know.
No, I think it's iTunes. Apple Music is their streaming service. And iTunes is where you can buy your music still. I don't know what they're trying to do.
I think it's called Apple Podcasts. Well, anyways, go to your podcasting device and you can write a review. And that would be really dope.
That'd be hella dope.
It was so dope. Also, big thanks to our editor-in-chief.
We'll Tara Dunderdell, PhD.
PhD in the house. Thank you
so
much.
You're the best.
And also big thanks to our Brownout for supplying our wonderful, wonderful music.
Our theme music.
Thank you to Oprah.
You know what? Thanks to Oprah. Thanks to Gail. Thanks to
you. Yeah, the whole team. Yeah. Also, something that you pointed out that, like, I think you said this offline, If someone is like side-eyeing things about Oprah, because like now I feel like I can be like super boisterous about like Oprah is my guru, I love her,
yeah,
that speech, and not feel like any shame or embarrassment, which why did I ever? But anyways,
don't. Yes.
If someone side-eyes you about your love for Oprah or Oprah Winfrey in general, that speaks more to their own soul than anything else.
It does, because why? Why are you mad at Oprah? Oprah did nothing to you except bring you joy.
She is the she's one of the ultimate connector mavens and salespeople out there in the world.
Agreed.
We'll definitely got to get her on Maven to Maven. Well, thanks.
Plans. Big plans.
We got big plans and big dreams.
Well, we love you guys so much. It's been a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week, and enjoy your week.
Love you guys so much, and thanks for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together, we're the majority.
Hey, Biz, have you seen any good movies lately?
Hey, Teresa, does Curious George's Boo Fest count?
It doesn't.
Well, I blame my current life situation that has small children that need things. God, I love them, and I miss knowing about stuff.
Well, after catching up on the current cultural offerings on podcasts that provide such information, join us on One Bad Mother as we help explore the harsh realities of sweeping self-identity changes as we try to find ourselves between our pre- and post-kid selves.
I used to like all the things. Download One Bad Mother on MaximumFun.org or Apple Podcasts. And yes, there will be swears.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
Butts.
No. You change your mind.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.